tons of developments coming out of the combine. We're talking Kyler Murray and whether he'll land with the Cardinals, and if so, what happens to Josh Rosen? Plus, the pass rushers and receivers light up the workouts. Jason Witten returns. Nick Foles is a free man, and Antonio Brown just keeps on saying things. We're breaking down all of it on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. Andy Benoit, the coward Andy Benoit. I think he was so shell-shocked by the beating I gave him on the Antonio Brown debate last week that he just didn't show up this week. So no Andy Benoit this week. Jenny Vrentis stepping in for him. And Jenny, you're coming straight from the combine. We'll actually get to talk some draft this week.
Exceptionally big shoes to fill this week, Gary.
Fairly big shoes. I think Andy would argue exceptionally big shoes, but we will fill them admirably because Andy's still jumping into the draft guys. So whenever we start to talk draft guys, he has to kind of deflect and work his way through it. But now we have actual draft information to talk.
Right.
It's exciting.
At least we can brand me as being fresh off the combine, and that will convey some sense of authority.
Yeah. Well, we're also going to talk. We'll talk Jason Witten. We'll talk Antonio Brown, who just has so many things to say, and Nick Foles as well, as a little later in the show. But we're going to do sort of a combine roundup.
Great. I'm excited.
It should be good. And obviously the biggest story for most people, the only story coming out of the combine this week, Kyler Murray, first of all. He measured as a full-grown human adult.
Yeah, you know, it really is the Kyler Murray combine, right? He didn't even work out. He was, you know, kind of hanging back, sitting on the bench or at the back of the quarterback's group during the throwing session. He'll wait for his March 13th pro day. But even still, you know, he dominated the conversation the entire combine, you know, largely because, you know, the Cardinals have the number one pick, and there's all these rumors about will they go with Murray. And so, you know, his height was a storyline, and then the Cardinals was a storyline, and he's just the most interesting character. He's a quarterback. There's the baseball thing. You know, we're going to be hearing about this for the next months.
What's your sense of Kyler to the Cardinals' chances? Is it for real? Cardinals, obviously, they have a lot of holes to fill. They could use some more picks here, and a trade down would do that.
I would not be surprised if the Cardinals took him at number one.
Yeah.
I am not ready to say that will definitively happen, but I would not be shocked if that happened, which is saying something because they just obviously drafted a quarterback in the first round last year. They traded up to get Josh Rosen. In a different era of the NFL, we are not even having this conversation, right? When before the rookie wage scale, it would be, you know, the contract would be too burdensome, right? So at this point in time, it wouldn't be really that possible to move a guy you drafted in the first round the year prior. But I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation about this for a couple reasons. One, we all know based on his own words that Cliff Kingsbury loves Murray, and before he was even considered, you know, that he would be an NFL coach, before we knew he'd be an NFL coach, he said he would take him with number one overall, and then mm-hmm. here we are. Steve Keim left the door open in a big way by saying that, you know, Rosen was their quarterback right now for sure. You know, that was a strong statement when he certainly could have, you know, dispelled all of these rumors publicly. He chose not to for whatever reason. That could be a smokescreen or that could be the doors open. It could mean a lot of things, but he certainly didn't shoot those rumors down. And, you know, I think Murray is, teams view him differently. Everyone has a different opinion on Kyler Murray. That was what was clear at the combine. You know, some see him as, you know, the most exciting player they've seen all year. Others see him as a guy that's, you know, boom or bust potential, right? Others see him as, you know, a bridge guy to another franchise quarterback, which is a strange characterization perhaps for a Heisman winner. But, you know, he's obviously a different mold of quarterback. And it's easy to liken him to Baker Mayfield because of the school they went to, because of the size, but they're really very different personalities. But I think the fit with the Cardinals, one reason it makes a lot of sense is because he's this mobile passer who can either create a play or run the play that you've called and could mask a lot of the issues they have on the offensive line. So perhaps if you take Kyler Murray and trade Rosen, maybe you sort of cover up some of the protection issues you had last season.
Yeah, I was going to say, Josh Rosen was a sitting duck back there. I mean, they couldn't function offensively with what they had on the offensive line with a non-mobile quarterback. Kyler is, so we know he's unique on the field. And if you're gonna take him, you have to have a specific scheme in mind. You have to have a plan in mind for him. You can't plug him in. You're not going to run the same offense with Kyler Murray that you were going to run with Josh Rosen. Secondly, and Robert Klumko had a really good piece on the MMQB last week. He talked to Scott McLuhan. McLuhan, of course, he worked with Seattle back when they took Russell Wilson. He was instrumental in convincing John Dorsey to take Baker Mayfield a year ago. Look, the questions with Kyler is there's the commitment question. Obviously, he was ready to pursue a career in professional baseball, and then he had the Heisman season. He only spent a year at Texas A&M. The other thing that sort of stands out to me, though, is a lot of evaluators will tell you, and you know, he's a unique prospect, so it's not a one-to-one comparison, but Kyler would have been fifth among the quarterbacks last year, behind Rosen, behind Josh Allen, and then obviously behind Baker and Darnold. But this almost feels like for the Cardinals, like hitting the reset button on the rookie wage scale time clock again, which is, I guess, how you build a roster in 2019.
Yeah, you know, and it is interesting, like you said, that a lot of the quarterbacks in last year's class would have ranked higher than them in the minds of most evaluators. And that's why it's kind of like, is Murray getting pulled up because this is a thin class for quarterbacks and Cliff Kingsbury wants to bring in someone who's his guy and, you know, this is the best option for his class? Or, you know, does he really think that this is going to be the guy that's going to, you know, lead the offense the way he wants the offense to be run? I think there's just, you know, one thing that I wonder a lot is, you know, is Mayfield's success kind of pulling up Murray in the minds of many? Like, you know, is his stock higher because of that? So you can certainly make the argument that the safer pick would be Nick Bosa, right? You know, the overall best player on the board, you take him. But if you are, you know, looking, like you said, to sort of restart, you know, you bring in a rookie quarterback with a rookie head coach, you run this exciting offense that he wants to run. But I think, you know, Gary, the two things you mentioned, you know, commitment is really on the minds of a lot of NFL evaluators, right? Things didn't go well at Texas A&M. He transferred, you know, he said he was going to play baseball and then, you know, decides that football is where his heart is and he wants to pursue that. And normally I would not care at all if a player decides to work out of the combine or not. I don't really think it matters and it probably doesn't matter in Murray's case. But I do think if you're an evaluator and you see the statement that Murray put out that I'm willing to do anything to prove to you that I am a franchise quarterback. And then, you know, maybe he doesn't take the opportunity of the big stage at the combine. That would seem to be everything, right? So those are the words that he picked. And then, you know, the second concern obviously is he is a little bit smaller. And even though the 5'10 was a big benchmark, you know, he is smaller and he is not as sturdy as the Mayfields and the Wilsons. You know he got the weight up and the numbers look fine, but just seeing, you know, seeing the player that was on the field last year doesn't have, I do still think the size is on the minds of evaluators because basically if you're below the general benchmark in one area, you really have to be exceptional in other areas. And I do think some evaluators think he is. He's exceptional in the way he creates plays. That might be enough in their minds, but it is something you have to, you know, have another area to almost compensate for.
Yeah, it's something we talk about when Andy's on the show. I'm sorry to keep bringing up Andy, but we talk about it a lot. It comes down to vision. It comes down to being able to see the field well. He obviously could do it at Oklahoma well enough. However, space is different in college football. You have a lot more space available. You tend to have wider splits with your offensive linemen, and they obviously, I mean, that Oklahoma team was far more talented than anyone they faced last season while Kyler was there. But so let's say Kyler is on the top of Cliff Kingsbury's wish list here and they decide they're going to go with him. What, I don't know, do you have a sense of what the market is for Josh Rosen at this point?
I could see teams trying to buy low on Rosen. You know, even if you didn't particularly love him last year, maybe you think you can get him at a lower value than, you know, he was drafted 10th overall last year, right? So if you could give up anything below that, in theory, you're getting a bargain for him. And perhaps there are teams that would say, hey, I think particularly a team that might, like, you know, look at a team that has a veteran guy and might need to develop a young guy. That's one idea, right? Because you would take Rosen and for whatever reason, a lot of things didn't go right in Arizona last year. But I think you know, it's pretty clear that he didn't have a lot around him. It's also clear, I think, that Rosen has a lot to learn about being an NFL quarterback. So maybe you stick him behind a veteran guy and you try to groom him. I have a hard time seeing a team giving up more than a second for him, but it's possible that the Cardinals wouldn't budge unless they got a first, and perhaps that changed the conversation. But I think you're talking a second or a third.
Yeah.
Which seems like a big discount, right?
That does. That's not going to make the Cardinals very happy.
Right. I agree.
That doesn't do a whole lot for you. No, that's interesting. And of course, he did something with his Instagram account. I don't know enough about Instagram to know if it's possible. What do you say? Someone hacked him and deleted everything except for his two most recent pictures and also everything before his Cardinals pictures.
Wow. So, you know, they're either strongly considering Murray or this is the most elaborate ruse of all time, right? You put
yes.
your general manager up there, you know, saying, you know, non-committing to your quarterback, and then you have your quarterback making a statement with the, I mean, look, if they pull off an elaborate ruse, this is extremely impressive.
It's kind of fun. Like, last year was fun when the Browns just, like, held the pick secret until the very end. Even though they knew who they were picking, they didn't leak it like it happens every year, and that was enjoyable, and maybe this will hold our attention during draft season.
You're right. It was very suspenseful last year.
All right. Before we move on to the rest of the quarterbacks and some of the other happenings at the Combine, a quick note here. You know, as all these NFL evaluators at the Combine could tell you, hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So there were other quarterbacks who were at the Combine. Some of them even did things besides getting measured. They threw the ball. They ran in straight lines. It was other stuff going on. Let's start with Dwayne Haskins, though, because obviously he's a Jersey kid. Grew up a Giants fan. A lot of people connecting him to the Giants. It seems like he's a Giants style type of guy. If you want a more classic pocket passer, that is not Kyler Murray. That's Dwayne Haskins at this point. But it seems like the reports on him were pretty good with what he did this week.
Yeah, I agree. You know, in this class, it's really Murray and Haskins as the top two, and then everyone else below that. And so, you know, Haskins threw in that first group. I thought he looked pretty good. You know, I think some people thought he had sort of a, you know, an okay performance. I think others thought he threw the ball really well, that he looked like a professional. I think he had some really good throws as the session went on. He had a corner post combo toward the end of the session. He had a few nice throws on that. His deep ball had a lot of air under it. The placement was good. So I thought you could see that he had been and coached pretty well in college. Obviously, he played for a big-time program. Mm-hmm. And you're right. You know, he certainly, you know, is that fits that traditional mold of the quarterback, and the team like the Giants seems like they are more inclined to go with a traditional mold. The other thing I heard about him is that he did really well in the chalkboard sessions, that he had excellent recall and was very sharp when teams had him, you know, in the interview room. His personality is, you know, he's a little, you can see it just in media interviews. He's a little laid back,
yep.
Which is a little different sometimes for a franchise quarterback. But I think we also have to remember that, you know, the quarterbacks coming in today, like it's a different generation, right? I mean, they're leading guys that are older than them, sure, but they're leading a lot of their peers, and I don't know. I think it's more likely now that a kid may have that kind of laid back demeanor, right? Than
yeah.
I think that's sort of more what we see more often now.
Well, so you could go back to like January, February last year, the discussion around Baker was like, you know, he's like a little bit different personality-wise, and he's going to turn some people off, and is he for everyone type of thing. And I think by the end of the draft process, everyone kind of loved him.
Yeah, the one thing I will say with Baker, though, that I don't see in either Murray or Haskins is just that edge. Like, it comes off publicly, right? That, like, Robert Klemko story that I always go back to with the teammate called him, like, a dog. Like, that, I think, really appeals to teams because they could just see that fire burning, which I, not to say the other guys don't have, I just think it's really apparent that he just really wants to, he's just defiant, you know, in a really good way for a competitor.
And we're probably still looking at Drew Locke and Daniel Jones as the other first-round candidates here.
I that seems to be where things are. You know, Locke looked really good throwing the football, which I think a lot of people expected. I don't think that that was going to be a surprise. You know, the question is, why didn't he win more often, right?
Yeah.
And I thought Jones looked fine. I didn't think, you know, but again, these throwing sessions, there's only so much you can tell, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're running route concepts where the timing isn't really matching the footwork, and these are guys you haven't thrown to. But yeah, that seems to be, you know, kind of the assessment of the tiers, I guess, of the class.
Yeah. Locke has this terrible habit of, like, drifting back as he throws for no particular reason. If you watch him at Missouri, and reminds me a lot of Joe Flacco, quite frankly, and maybe that's maybe Denver ends up being his landing spot here. But I would figure he would be a guy who would just light up combine and pro day and that sort of thing, and maybe those mechanical issues sort of pop up next season, or maybe they get coached out of him this summer.
Right, that's a good assessment.
Also, Connor's guy. We have to mention Connor's guy because he measured in at 8 feet tall and then ran like a 4.240. Is Tyree Jackson, who's 6'7" and 249, I think the weight was, and he ran a 4.59 40. Yeah. Connor must have been so happy.
I mean, the 40 was extremely impressive for that size. We were sitting in the media box, you know, for the quarterback throwing session, and one of the other reporters from ESPN was just like, this guy looks like a basketball player, and he really does. Like, he really stood out among the group. It was easy to find the quarterback groups because you just needed to look for him, and then you knew where the rest of the guys were, right? You know, it was easy to spot them on the field. You know, I think throwing, he's clearly raw. You know, he clearly would be something of a project, you know, watching him in the passing drills.
Yeah.
So you could see the contrast between a more natural passer, right? So I do think a team looking at him sees a lot to work with, but I do think it's something that would take, you know, take an investment of time.
Yeah. No, he was the thing that always stood out to me at Buffalo. Everything was, he was just so, like, heavy footed and mechanically slow, and you could see it was just segmented and not really natural the way he plays, but he is a very interesting developmental prospect at this point. And speaking of workout warriors, I should mention we are taping on Sunday. I'll call it Sunday evening at this point. So the defensive linemen and the linebackers went today. We don't have the defensive back workouts, but overall, we talked about this a little before the show, Jenny. It was kind of a combine where the guys who we thought were really good athletes tested really well. And some of the guys who we thought had flaws, you saw those flaws. So I don't know if anyone necessarily shocked us. We are going to get to DK Metcalf in a little bit. But the defensive line workouts were, I mean, they were fictional. If you saw the numbers, they were just they included just some biomechanical impossibilities, I feel like, and that has to be worrisome for a league where teams have so many offensive line issues, and you got all these guys coming in now, whether it's Montez Sweat, who has the wingspan of a pterodactyl, and now he ran a 4.41 40 at 260 pounds. Even my guy Dexter Lawrence at 340 pounds ran his almost 5 flat 40 time, but all these other guys, Rashawn Gary and John Kaminsky, the University of Charlotte guy, ran a 4.69 at 285 pounds. And Colin Saunders, another one of our guys at 330 pounds, runs a 5 flat. Sorry, I won't run through the numbers anymore. But Quinnen Williams had a monster workout. I mean, these guys are, this is a wave of disruptive pass rushers coming in that has to be terrifying to anyone with offensive line problems in this league.
Yeah, and we've heard that this class is so deep on the defensive line, but I think what the workouts did in this case for the general public gets people excited, right? Because no one really, you know, if you're talking about the draft class, people mostly pay attention to quarterbacks, and you hear, okay, we know this was going to be a great defensive line class, but then you see some of these, like, freak show numbers, and you're just like, I think it really sort of, you know, those names will stick in people's minds a little bit more. I think what's kind of amazing is, like, no matter what system you run, like, there's somebody that will fit, right?
I mean, yeah.
These are, like, really versatile guys that would work in a lot of different systems, but there's a lot of different styles, whether you want, you know, interior, or you're looking for an edge guy, or, you know, you're looking for someone that kind of can, you know, be a hybrid. I don't know. It just seems like there's a great diversity of skills in this class as well.
Yeah. Guy like, I just want to highlight real quick, Rashawn Gary, who's probably going to be one of the more polarizing prospects as we go up toward draft night here. But I mean, look, not a whole lot of production in college. He's a high effort guy. There was no problem with him, like, taking plays off or anything like that. He did have some shoulder problems last year, but he was a guy who just never really dominated in college, and we knew what kind of talent he had coming into the University of Michigan. But, you know, this was kind of a reminder of what he is athletically, and for some people, a reminder of, well, you know, that's what he is athletically, and he still didn't do a whole lot with it at Michigan.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously there's always that risk. You know, I covered the Jets, Vernon Golston, you know, yeah. I fell in love with him at the combine. And so, you know, you clearly don't want to get too tied up in these numbers. But if you think about it, you know, there, like you said, there are so many teams picking at the top of the draft. A lot of them have line issues. And so, you know, now you're picking again and you're getting a defensive line that is lineman that could, you know, is going to stress your opponent's offensive line, but it doesn't really do anything, you know, and for the guys that you're going to be seeing, right?
Yeah.
So it just, you know.
Not to pick on the offensive lineman coming in this year, but they didn't. Yeah, there's not quite the same buzz going on with that side of the trenches at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, other than, you know, let's say Murray does go number one overall. I mean, you could see, you know, the defensive linemen are in the mix for what, the next four picks?
Yeah, yeah. It is a defense heavy draft, and if you watch the combine on Sunday, you saw why. But one thing Andy and I talk on the show a lot about, and I'm taking a quote, I think it's from Mike Shula. I always forget who told him this, but basically the quote is, the offensive linemen can't block the pass rushers, and the defensive backs can't guard the receivers, and that's what you have to build your scheme around. And this is, we see all the pass rushers coming in, and you're going to have problems in the offensive line. But the receiver class, and we heard a lot during the fall that the receiver class wasn't going to be great, but it seems so deep, and it seems to have so many guys who you'd look at and say, well, if he does pan out, and there's a lot of them, if this guy does pan out, this guy's a number one receiver, this guy's a number one receiver. So you figure you're going to end up with a handful of really good playmakers coming out of this class.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, Gary. It does seem to be really deep, because the talk leading up was that, oh, well, it sort of depends on what style you want. You know, are there going to be enough, you know, really good guys at the top? But I think if you need a receiver, you do have a lot of options. You know, there were seven guys, I think, who ran sub 4.4, seven receivers, which is kind of crazy. You know, there's slot guys, there's really big physical guys. I mean, just look comparatively style-wise, you've got Metcalf, and then you've got Hollywood Brown, who are, like, opposite sort of ends of the spectrum,
yeah,
style-wise, but, like, both equally fast. So I do think there are some decent options this year at receiver, even if it might not be – it doesn't look like the strongest class at the top. I think if you need a receiver, it's not a bad year to need one.
Yeah, and you mentioned the seven sub 4.4 40s, and Marquise Brown didn't run because of the foot surgery, so that probably would have been eight at that point. But DK Metcalf, he stole the show. He looks like Popeye right after he eats the spinach, and, like, just crazy things are going on with his body, but that is how his body is permanently. Really good in the straight line stuff, really good in the explosive stuff. He actually performed quite poorly in the, you know, in the short shuttle and the cone drill, the change of direction, short area quickness type of stuff. So it's pretty clear he's a guy you're going to use as a deep threat. I don't know how well-rounded he has a chance to become at the next level, though. So Andy and I did a show last week about, you know, number one receiver, and how do you define a number one receiver at this point in the league? And a guy like Metcalf, who, I don't know if he's going to have a full route tree at any point, but obviously when you run like that and you're as powerful as he is, that there's a spot for you to be a major threat in this league.
Right. I think that's a great point, right? There are going to be routes that he doesn't run. He's not quite as comprehensive in that regard. You know, I think another question about him is how comfortable you are with the medical. I mean, obviously, yeah. he was cleared. He's been cleared. He's participating in the combine. But do you have any reservations about the neck injury, right, that ended his season? And, mm-hmm. you know, really you're working off of, what, one full season in college of really good productivity. So I think, you know, there are some of those things. What John Gruden said, I think, was what a lot of coaches see is this is a guy that's going to be hard to tackle. Like, imagine yeah. trying to bring someone like that down. And so I don't think it's, you know, remember John Ross, right? Like, was blazing fast, and that yep. obviously has not turned out. But I think Metcalf's a little different, right? Because
yeah.
you've got this, like, obviously they're completely different styles and sizes. But, like, just think about trying – think about Metcalf running towards you and trying to bring that down, which is exactly what John Gruden said. I mean, he compared him to like Jim Brown, which was kind of like yeah. absurd, you know, but like, you know, absurd, yeah. absurd in the fact that like, that's like a lofty comparison.
I was going to say, at the very least, and I know he doesn't have return experience at Ole Miss, but it's like a Cordarrelle Patterson type of thing. It's just, it's a very large, very fast man coming at you.
One thing I will say is, like, I do not believe that the body fat is actually below 2%. I
think that can't be possible.
No,
right?
I asked around a little bit, and I do think it's medically not possible. I think the obviously he's incredibly fit, and not to take away from that, I'm sure he probably has the lowest body fat percentage yeah. at the combine because you can see that. But they test these guys using these bod pods, which apparently have a couple percentage points of error in them. And
okay.
so I would say it's most likely not below 2.
I was going to say, I didn't think he could possibly be alive with like a 1 point, what is it, 1.6 was what it was reported at?
Yeah, and then I think he corrected it to like 1.9 later, but I'm gonna say it's probably around 3.
Yes.
That's going to be my guess.
Which is embarrassing. But
totally
yeah.
embarrassing.
Yeah, it's, you know, there was a report. This is Therese Paler over at Yahoo had reported earlier in the week. Golden Tate and Adam Humphries looking for $10 million plus on the open market here as free agents. This had to be a horrible weekend for them to see these receivers working out, because it really is. I mean, if you're looking for slot guys, and Tate is obviously not purely slot, but he sort of falls in that sort of slot slash gadget type of role. But I mean, you're just looking around it at day two slot guys: Mecole Hardman out of Georgia, Andy Isabella out of UMass, AJ Brown is a big slot. Paris Campbell mm-hmm. is maybe more of a gadget guy at this point in his career, but I mean, there are guys you can basically get for a tenth of that if you take them in the draft. And these receivers, this is not a good week to be a free agent receiver.
Yeah, you know, and talking to people sort of leaving the workouts, you know, you try to pull, oh, what did you see? Who looked good in the passing workouts? And of course, you encounter some teams that have a franchise quarterback and weren't really paying attention to the quarterbacks and were only looking at the receivers. But the people that I talked to were really excited by what they saw from the receivers. You know, you mentioned Campbell, one of the many Ohio mm-hmm. State receivers who performed well. And I think we're getting to him later. But N'Keal Harry, I thought, really... really impressed at the combine. Like, there was one absurd catch that he had, where it was kind of like one-handed, bounced off the turf. There were some, like, you could hear some audible reactions in the stadium to some of
yeah.
the things that he did. So,
yeah, I want to hit a couple guys miscellaneous, and you can throw in anyone you might want. But I did want to mention N'Keal Harry. Jonathan Jones had written about him, and he has a nice backstory with his grandmother. It's
yes.
it's very sweet, and I don't want to get carried away with that, because that, you know, that doesn't always affect how good you are as a player. But the thing that when I watched him at Arizona State. And not that he's going to be this guy, but I always thought DeAndre Hopkins when I watched him. He really doesn't separate, but he's so acrobatic, and his hands are so strong, and he's so just insanely competitive. And it's tough. It's a fine line for contested catch specialists like this, going from the college level to the NFL level. But I feel like he has such an incredible understanding of how to leverage defensive backs at the catch point, and basically just overall his ability to play with someone on his back. And then he went out and ran, I believe it was a 4.55.
That sounds right, yeah.
A lot of people thought he was going to run the 4.6s. So I thought, I mean, I kind of feel like he he ran himself back into the first round conversation. I hate getting carried away with the, you know, like he ran this and therefore he really raised his stock or something like that. But it was a red flag for him. And I think if he ran like a 4.65 or a 4.7, you would have seen him day two. But I think he's back in the day one conversation at this point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, that 40 time was exactly what he needed. And like you said, you don't want to put too much stock into it, but teams like him because of his, you know, ball skills and the plays he's able to make. And then to additionally add that speed to it, I think was a huge plus for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And a couple of running backs that stood out to David Montgomery and Devin Singletary, neither of whom put up very good 40 times, but they're so contact balance. I mean, that's what it's all about for running backs at this point. And those two guys are two of the best. Singletary is also so good catching the ball. I think both those guys are, if they go day three, that would be crazy. I think they're still day two picks at this point. The only guy who really truly disappointed was probably Elijah Holyfield out of Georgia, who ran, you know, sometimes it's just about avoiding red flags at the combine. And you know, Holyfield ran a 4.79, and it's tough to be a day two prospect with, and he does not have pass catching skills. They didn't use him in that capacity at Georgia, and he didn't look good doing it at the combine. So this was a tough couple of days for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's more of a power guy, but you don't think quite that slow, right? So I do think that was, you know, that was one of the ones that stood out as something that would, you know, would hurt his stock.
Yeah. And the two that I'm looking at for Monday's workouts, and again, we are taping on Sunday, and I apologize. We don't know what's going to happen in the future here, but the two defensive backs, and as you mentioned, it's teams are going to need defensive backs. There are a lot of good receivers coming to the league now, but DeAndre Baker, who, you know, there was a lot of talk, Greedy Williams or DeAndre Baker during the year, DeAndre Baker being the Georgia cornerback that a lot of people thought was the better pure cover guy than Greedy Williams. But he showed up, you know, he's 5'11". Everyone thought he was too small, but he had 32-inch arms, which obviously that offsets that to an extent. He and Byron Murphy out of Washington, and I think Byron Murphy is a little bit of a miniature Marcus Peters clone, and I know that's kind of a lazy comparison because they're both Washington guys, but those two guys, it was kind of a length-speed combination with them to see if they could run deep with guys, and would you have to relegate them to sort of cover two type stuff where they'd have safety help behind them, but 32-inch arms for DeAndre Baker makes a big difference for me. I think he's back in the running to be the top cornerback off the board.
You're a big wingspan guy, Gary.
I am. Love my wingspans.
But you're right. I mean, size with both of those guys was the question. You know, I think Baker has really good instincts. I feel like that's what teams seem to like about him. So I think, I don't know. I do think the measurables were something they had their eye on. But I think that Baker, he could go in a wide range. I don't exactly know where he'll fall yet. But I do think there's a lot of teams that really like the way he plays, you know.
This is all, if he runs like a 4.7 tomorrow, this
well,
is all.
Well, right, then we've got to re-record this segment.
Yes, but he's very physical, and he just seemed like a very small physical guy because you'd see in the program he's listed at 5'10", 5'11", and then to a, he's got some size to him. I think Byron Murphy's still maybe a little too small. He's more of an off-coverage guy, but we'll see what happens with him. But I think most importantly, I think the real headliner, and we buried the lead here, the punters were so fast, Jenny. So many fast punters.
So much so that I think I saw someone tweet about how many punters were faster than Elijah Holyfield as like as a benchmark. So that's never a good thing.
I think the three of them who ran the 40, they were all 4.73 or faster.
But were any of them left-footed?
Oh, that's
good.
We
didn't check that. Yeah. We didn't do our homework, Gary.
Because Belichick wouldn't even have watched the 40s.
Right. Zero interest unless they had that going for them.
We have some non-draft headlines to talk about before we wrap up here. Jason Witten. Jason Witten is coming back, which, I think that's the most shocking thing I've heard in probably the past calendar year in the NFL.
It was very shocking. You know, at the combine, you're sort of in this vortex where, like, there might be periods of time where you're, like, running between meetings and you don't really look at your phone that much. And someone said, oh, Witten's coming back. And I was like, I wasn't sure if they were kidding at first, you know, but
to the Monday Night Football booth. Yes.
Right, yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, there were obviously reports last year, right, that they were either trying to get him to come out of retirement or he was trying to get them to let him come out. I mean, ultimately, it's a win for ESPN, right? I mean, they were going to try to go forward and continue to make this combination work. And now they get to really kind of reset and without looking like they're bailing after a year, you know, they can bring someone else in. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think Lewis Riddick would be great. I'm not the only person who has said that, but he is already great in the role that they have. And I think he would be great in a bigger role for them. And it would be easy to bump him up into that spot. And I really hope that he gets that because I think he brings a lot of insight and he's not afraid to say things. That's what I think is great about Riddick. You know, he will say whatever it is he believes and he doesn't seem like he's holding back at all, which is interesting to think of, you know, with Witten, he goes into the booth and obviously still had some desire to play. So how did that affect his performance last year and his ability to be totally open, right?
It was tough. I don't know. Will he even go back to broadcasting at this point when it's over? It seems like he's probably more on a coaching track now, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And the other thing I thought of was, you know, Peter King had done a story about all the things that Witten was doing to prepare his body to play you know, before he retired. So you sort of think about that year out and then like getting back into that routine, like, wow.
Yeah.
That's like a big change.
I mean, last spring, it was surprising when he walked away. And it seemed like he was walking away because the Monday Night Football opportunity was just too good for him at that point. Like, I'm not obviously, as we see now, he maybe wasn't quite ready to leave it all behind. But I do wish he would have been, I don't know, he had started his broadcasting career as, like, I don't know, the number four Fox team or something like that, and could have worked out of the spotlight a little bit.
You're right. And, you know, maybe it's an apt comparison to, like, because Tony Romo, right, they did this with Witten. Because Baker Mayfield, are we pulling up Murray as well? It relates to our earlier conversation.
See, that's why sometimes it's nice to not have Andy around.
For bad analogies?
No, because if he had heard that, he would have said something very very disparaging. And I'm just glad we're on the same wavelength, Jenny.
Me too, Gary.
Nick Foles is free, and it sounds like Jacksonville. I believe Les Bowen at the Philadelphia Inquirer reporters day that Jacksonville. I mean, Jacksonville seems like just by far the most logical landing spot for him.
Yeah, and it's unclear at this point what, you know, how much where else he would go, right? I mean, obviously, Denver, when they made the Flacco trade, that took them out. Now, that's not to say that they necessarily would have been in play for Foles, but that was one potential landing spot that closed up. It's really an interesting conversation, right? Because Foles there's different opinions on him. I mean, he's a Super Bowl MVP, and there are people who don't believe that he's a franchise quarterback still. And I have to imagine that that's something that is probably frustrating to him because you feel like you come in these situations and you, you know, perform well when no one thinks that you will, both last year and this year. And, you know, now, you know, you're sort of wondering how big your market will be when a year earlier we see this incredibly robust market for Kirk Cousins, who has not accomplished the things in his career that Foles has.
Yeah. And I mean, look, this is the other thing. When we're talking about quarterbacks in the draft, if you draft a quarterback in the first round and he ends up being a bust, there's not that much of a financial commitment you're making to him. Now, Nick Foles probably isn't going to get, like, you know, 4 or 5 years of big guaranteed money, but you're going to have to give him multiple years. You're going to have to give him at least two. So if he goes down to Jacksonville, and when we watched the Eagles last year and Chris Collinsworth was doing the game, how many times do you hear Chris Collinsworth say above the rim with Foles throwing to his receivers? In Jacksonville, they don't have anyone like that. They loaded up on all those small, fast, deep threat guys. So now you're dropping him into a team which, you know, obviously they built up their identity as a run first team, and John DeFilippo was there, the quarterback's coach in Philadelphia 2 seasons ago for Foles, but it's going to be a weird fit. That there's risk involved. There's significant risk because if you're wrong and Foles ends up regressing to what he was, or I should say what people thought he was before the Eagles signed him off the street a couple years ago, you have just made a major commitment to to a guy who's not your franchise quarterback.
Right. At least there's optimism, I think, that his pairing with DeFilippo would be a good one versus, you know, being with, you know, in the Rams, Jeff Fisher era, where no quarterback seemed to have much chance of success.
Yeah. And lastly, Antonio Brown. See, when the Steelers went down to meet with, like, Rosenhaus and Antonio Brown and that whole thing a couple weeks ago, they should have set up something where they put him in, like, I guess it would be like a reverse Truman Show type of world where they set up a bunch of interviews, but they weren't real interviews. They just told him it was a real interview.
Wow.
So that he thought he was getting, and set up like an internet that was actually an intranet. So therefore when he's tweeting, like, and then you have all these sort of bots like replying to his tweet, and just set up a whole fake world so that Antonio Brown is not broadcasting to the world, but he thinks he is. And that way you're sort of keeping him occupied that way, because the more he talks publicly on this, the less teams are interested in him. And at this point, I don't know. We've heard Raiders and Titans thrown out there.
We've heard Saints.
But, Steelers want a first-round pick, rightfully, because he is that kind of talent. But I don't know. I don't know if anyone's taking on the headache at this point.
You know, I think the Truman Show analogy is a great one for two reasons. One, it's the rare movie reference that I actually get.
There you go.
I feel like I can contribute to this conversation and can give a genuine reaction. And two, that is a great idea. And I think you should potentially consider a second career as a media consultant.
Yes.
Where you can propose such things. There are certainly teams that at the start of this process would have been interested that who have been talked out. The last thing a team wants to hear, I think the one quote that stood out to me the most was, I don't even have to play football or some version of that, right? That's the last thing that a team wants to hear. I mean, that's the last thing that's why there's some reservations about Kyler Murray, right? You know,
yep.
He hasn't said that, but he doesn't have to play football because there is this baseball option, right? So I think with Brown, I don't exactly know if there has been a cohesive strategy, right? I mean, I think he wants people to understand where he's coming from, and I think he does have legitimate points. You know, the comment about 52 kids from Colbert was not a good one, and I think it does sort of speak to some of the cultural issues at the Steelers that, mm-hmm. you know, that have made Brown and Bell, two top players, not want to play there anymore. But I think there was a way to convey that without reinforcing that you may have been part of the problem, right? And so, unfortunately, Antonio Brown has said legitimate things while at the same time looking like he was a big problem.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of that, and Andy and I had a long discussion about it last week on the show about Antonio Brown and how he will age. I think he'll age fairly well. Andy's a little bit skeptical. He's 31 years old. I mean, there is a legitimate question as to when his decline is going to come. I don't know. I don't know how this plays out. I don't know who's giving up a first round pick for him. I don't think anyone is.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Is he talking his way back to the Steelers, right? Because they won't be able to get the market they want. I mean, they're a smart organization. They're not going to just give him away. But at the same time, how does he, you know, fold back into the locker room? So you sort of have two choices. Do you take below market value, or what you believed to be market value before he started talking, or do you figure out a way to get everyone to kumbaya, which is not unprecedented? I mean, the Patriots came to a kumbaya within the last year, obviously different in some ways, but certainly no less scrutiny and, you know, no less intensity around, you know, would they be able to do that, right?
I just want to say one more thing, Jenny, about your pop culture knowledge.
Yes.
Because Andy Benoit, Andy knows more pop culture than he claims to.
Okay.
But like, he used to claim he had never heard the song Born to Run, which, as I've explained to him, is a literal impossibility. If you've been alive for 30 something years in the United States of America, like, you've heard, you might not be able to like recite the lyrics, but like, you know the hook, like you if you heard the song, you recognize it. He claimed he had never heard of the band Chicago. It just stuff that's madness.
That's absurd. Well, so this is one area where I'm actually better qualified than Andy Benoit. So
there you go.
I will take it. I will take that.
There you go. But you are leaning that way with your lack of pop culture.
But at least
knowledge.
The one reference you made, you know,
yes.
I got it. So I'm pretty proud of myself. I remember seeing the Truman Show. I think I was in high school. He went with a group of friends.
Yep.
Yeah. Great, great great pull at Gary. Hopefully I can continue my hot streak of getting pop culture references, and maybe you will consider having me back on the next time Andy is unavailable.
I will say I had to. It was originally going to be a reference to a Tim and Eric skit on Adult Swim, and I did have to. I did switch it to the reverse Truman Show.
Wow! So you, I
customized for it.
Thank you for coming down to my level.
It's also I feel like no person in the sports industry watches more Adult Swim than I do, or any Adult Swim.
So you thought it didn't have mass appeal. That's knowing your audience, Gary. Yeah. It's another trait that you have. That's a strong one.
It's something like that. But that's a wrap. Jenny, thank you so much for filling in for Andy.
Thanks, Gary. This was so fun.
I think it went swimmingly. The other thing I'll point out, I was going to say it off the air, but I'll just say it now. Andy's so loud, just volume-wise in my ears when we do the show, there was an adjustment for the first, 5 minutes. Because you have a very NPR delivery, whereas Andy is just shouting in my ear and rupturing my eardrum.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it was a pleasant experience for you.
It was. It worked out. It worked out very nicely. So, Jenny Rentis, thank you very much for pinch hitting for Andy this week. And we will have to do it again next time Andy bails.
Sounds great, Gary.
As he did. That'll do it for this show. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart every week. Thank you to producer Sean Cherry in here this week, making us sound good. All the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Thank you to our sponsor for this week's show, ZipRecruiter. Try them for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. Send your questions. We're going to do mailbag soon. Talk back at TheMMQB.com. Just put podcasts in the subject line. You can get Andy and I on Twitter or on Facebook. Andy will be back next week. We will have plenty of free agency talk and projections and discussions and guesses and perhaps arguments, but let's hope not, because we usually get along so well. Please subscribe to the full MMQB suite of podcasts. You will get our shows as well as Jenny and Albert Breer and Connor Orr every Wednesday. Just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.